views and opinions expressed on The Rachel Roberts Show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or other hosts or advertisers. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
Alrighty then.
And now it's time for The Rachel Roberts Show on AM 1340 KHUB.
Good morning. Welcome to the legendary K-Hub 1340 AM. This is Live with Rachel Roberts and Robin Donovan. She is an author of a fabulous book, and I'm going to say this. Hopefully there's no FCC regulations. I'm pretty sure you've mentioned the title on other air. Okay. It's called Is It Still Murder Even If She Was a Bitch? Sweet title. Welcome, Robin. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Really well. Oh, there you go. Now we have some sound.
Okay.
I get nervous why there's no sound.
People were thinking I was rude.
There you go. Okay, so you are a writer on the side or a full-time writer? How's that go?
A writer on the side, yeah.
A writer on the side.
Yeah, I do as much writing in my regular profession as I can, but that's sort of been relatively recent with the advent of blogging and things like that.
So, real life, you're in advertising?
Yes. In real life, I own Bozell, along with one of my, I have one partner and we own Bozell together. We're an ad agency in Omaha.
Nice. And what does Bozell do?
Anything that gets a message out there, whether it's public relations or TV, radio, newspaper, print, collateral, we do, marketing consulting, pretty much about anything that involves communication.
So writing's really not such a far fetch.
No, not at all. And especially, we always wrote business plans and media plans and brand strategies and things like that. But the writing sort of free form has been a little bit new with the advent of blogging. But we've been doing that for a long time. We've been in social media for a very long time now.
So when you're sitting down at night and you're doing things that you love to do, it's fiction you write.
Yes, it's fiction. It's humor. It's murder. Those are all some of my favorite things. And I try to incorporate a lot of other of my favorite things into the writing as well.
Do you love the criminal background or do you have experience in criminal background?
Not personally, thank goodness. But no, I mean, I grew up on Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie, and I just, it relaxes me.
Gotcha. So you're not from Nebraska originally?
No, I'm originally from New Jersey, which I do bring up in the book. My main character, Donna Lee, has been mistaken for me on a more than one occasion. She hails from New Jersey. That gives you a little bit of an edge that the rest of the world has trouble understanding, but it kind of makes for interesting characters. Then I moved to Connecticut and I moved to Omaha 14 years ago for a job at Bozell.
So Bozell's not your company.
It wasn't when I moved here, but it is now.
14 years ago, moving to Nebraska. What was that like? I'm moving to Nebraska.
Well, you know, it was an interesting experience because there were two reactions and they were polar opposite. Half the people said, "Are you crazy?" And the other half said, "You're going to love it."
Yeah.
And nobody was in between. Well, it was interesting because what I did find was the people who said I would love it were the people who had been here. And the other people were just some of those, you know, East Coast live in a box, never want to travel outside of it. Mm-hmm. Don't think there's a life outside. Some of them don't even think there's a life off the island of Manhattan, and they're kind of scary.
It would be kind of scary. They wouldn't see a corn plant, and I don't know how I'd go my whole life without seeing a corn plant.
You know, or animals. You know, I mean, it's
well, they have animals in Manhattan.
You know, they do, but it's a celebration. I was walking down a street in Manhattan one day and there was a tree and I had to stop because I said, "Oh, a tree." And then there was a black squirrel and I said,
"Don't you love the black squirrels?"
I do, but in Manhattan I had to ask myself, is he really black or did he just get that way by being here? He looked kind of ratty. So
smoggy.
His tail wasn't healthy looking. I really couldn't be sure.
Oh, gotcha. I remember with the arrival of black squirrels, I don't know how they came about in Nebraska, but I don't remember them when I was little.
I don't remember them either.
I know them now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's still an oddity.
They're rare. Yeah, they are.
I thought they were an East Coast phenomena.
I never really saw
black oak trees and things like that, maybe.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think. I could be wrong, but.
You know, if any of the listeners know where the black squirrels come from, just give me a call. 721. Inquiring minds want to know, because apparently they're not from Manhattan Island.
We can't stop right now and Google that, right?
We can during break.
Okay.
I often do. So I'm really intrigued by the title.
Okay.
It got me. It did.
Well, you know, the advertising business is a very emotive business. So we have high highs and low lows, and it's a lot of pressure. And I think I was coming off a time when there was a whole lot of pressure and I was looking to kill a lot of people. So I said, well, you know, let me kill somebody. And I had no idea how cathartic that would be until I actually did it.
I want to know what it's like to stalk. So all my books are like about stalkers.
Well, okay. You know, that's another. And you know, typically you're stalking someone before you kill them. So they're connected.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. And yeah, they're always trying to kill the person they're stalking, I think.
Of course.
I think. That's,
absolutely.
If I had a criminal mind, I'm thinking that's what the thought
it's
process
the goal.
Is. Right. So was your mother like mine and said, okay, writing's cute. I love you. You got great writing. Everything you've written is so awesome. You know, cheerleader, quite for certain. But when I went to go graduate from high school and I told my mom I want to be a writer, she just kind of looked at me and said, oh, that's great, honey, but you need something that makes money. You know, you need something that the realistic goal. That's what she called it, a realistic
right,
goal.
Right.
And that forever sticks in my brain. Because I've got my realistic career goals and I've achieved them. And so now I get to do my fun ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, I sort of backed into everything I did that could be ridiculed from a career standpoint. Because I started out as the holiest of holies, a high school English teacher. So people expected me to want to write,
sure.
But I didn't really have much opportunity because I was pretty much grading other people's papers. So then after 3 years of teaching, I said, I need something different. So that's when I got into advertising. And it was funny because I knew people who went right into advertising and people made fun of them in school because it wasn't considered a noble profession. It was considered sort of a shallow thing to do. So I escaped the ridicule because I was an English teacher. Then I flipped into advertising. So I was spared all of that. And then when I started getting into blogging and writing, that was sort of on the back end. So I think I've been lucky in that respect. Nobody has, I will say my dad said to me, really English? You think you'll get a job? You know, and I was like,
yeah.
Well, you know, Dad, I couldn't be a psychiatrist because I couldn't pass statistics. So, you know, I had to do something.
Yeah. I think once you get a degree anyway, people are like, okay, she's got a degree. You know, my parents were like, oh, she graduated high school. Oh, wait, she graduated college. She graduated graduate school. You know,
absolutely.
So now everything else I do.
Yeah, you're golden.
They just kind of look at me and go, oh, well, that sounds fun, Rachel.
And nobody's asking for the transcripts at this point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. When I told them I was going to do a show on KHUB, they were like, are you qualified for that? I said, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny because people say, oh, you know, you have a degree in English. And so they'll say, so you have a BS in English. I said, no, I have a BA in English, but I'm not even really sure what the difference is. But nobody cares. They put down what they want.
Well, you didn't pass statistics or you didn't take statistics.
I didn't.
So it's a BA.
It's a BA. I know it's a BA, but I see myself listed as a whole variety of degrees I don't have, and I don't know how it gets like that, but I try to correct it when I see it. But
I always say I have a BA in psychology because, didn't really particularly like the math or the science part of the BS.
No.
Save me from the BS jokes.
It was
too.
BS. Yeah.
Until I got a master's of science. And
all right.
Okay. Now it doesn't save me from the MS jokes. But hey, we got to take a quick break. If you have any questions, 721-1340, we're going to get into the book and what possessed you to write such a book.
Possessed is a good word.
Did I say possessed?
You did.
That is what you said. That's a right word. Okay. So we're going to take a quick break. Welcome back to KHUB, the legendary K-Hub, 1340 AM. You're live with Rachel Roberts and Robin Donovan, a writer, a local writer.
Yes.
Yes. We can call you local now that
we
you've
can.
Been here for so many years. So why fiction?
Well, that's a good question. I read a lot of fiction. I read a lot of murder mysteries, both serious and humorous. And it's an escape for me. It's, you know, takes me away from real life. So, writing fiction takes me away from real life too. Even though I write about people that look very much like the people I see every day and people that look very much, a person that looks a lot like me, I'm making everything up, but I'm making it up based on how I know these people would behave. So, it is really an amazing form of escape. I find that mm-hmm. I can sit and write for 8 hours. And, in fact, I don't even sit down to write if I have less than 3 or 4 hours.
In the same way. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Grab that tea with that natural honey and go a writing.
That's right.
So if you could say, okay, this is the writer that is close to what I'm writing, what would it be? As a new writer, I think that might be important for listeners to get.
Well, you know, I would say, and I know this is aspiring, but probably Janet Ivanovich.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
As I was looking through the book and... Yeah, even the title.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. Well, she helped me a lot. And I even went through, once I realized I needed a process, I even went through, because I've read pretty much everything she's written, and I said, okay, how many humorous incidents do I need to keep things moving and interesting? The great thing about Ivanovich is you can have some bad problems weighing on your mind, and it can really take you away and make you laugh out loud. Oh. And I think that is one of the best things you could do for humanity. Mm-hmm. When my very, very good friend who lives in New Jersey, when her mother passed away, she contacted me and said, I just don't sleep at all at night. I'm miserable. All I do is sit up and read all night long, and I'm just so unhappy. And I went to the bookstore, bought her 6 Ivanovich books and mailed them to her. And she said, oh my God, she said, I'm hooked. I can't believe I didn't know about this. And mm-hmm. it's helped me through those 2 o'clock in the morning crying about mom, and I'm laughing instead. Yeah. And that's what I was hoping for with what I write. I want to take people away, make them laugh out loud if I can, you know, and that's asking a lot. I know.
I agree with the Janet Ivanovich. I can pick her up in the worst of days and have a really good laugh fest. I'm like that with Charlene Harris though.
Okay.
Because I think she's funny as well, but I would like to suggest that to my mother, the Janet Ivanovich books, because I think they're great.
Well, just get them for her and send them to her.
You hear that, mom? They're on their way.
Here they come.
You can just borrow mine since you live in the same town.
You know, read mine first, mom. See if you like that. If you laugh at mine, you'll love Ivanovich.
That's true. Cause that's what we're here for. That's what we're here. Okay. So did anybody ever say anything about the title?
Yes, actually, I did the morning blend in Omaha. Yeah, and the host came to me beforehand. She was so sweet. She said, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. She said, the network had an incident last week, so we're blocking the B word. And they actually put a piece of tape over it when they showed the cover on the air. And she said, I'm so sorry. And I said, I think it's funny.
You know? The title is It Still Murder, Even If She Was a Bitch? I'm not an NBC network. So
okay.
We'll put that out
rip.
There. By Robin Donovan, if you're just tuning in. Fantastic, fantastic cover, fantastic title.
Thank you.
So you got into writing. What is this your very first book?
This is my first.
You're lucky enough to have your very first book published?
Well, I cheated a little bit.
Oh, do tell. Because inquiring minds would like to know.
Well, people say to me, how bad was the rejection? And I say, you know, up front, I cheated, so it wasn't bad. But I said, believe me, the libraries are making up for it. Not in Nebraska. The libraries in Nebraska have been wonderful to me. But outside of Nebraska, it's like, what do you mean you want a book in our library? You're not from here. And it's like, really? Do you only have books from people that live in your state? I mean, it just seems very odd. But the rejection in the beginning, what happened was it was kind of the perfect storm. I owned an ad agency, Bozell. So I have the means of promoting a variety of things, and also designing. They designed my book cover. I had been blogging. I do a blog called Menologues, and it's republished on Vibrant Nation, which is a website for women 50 plus, and it's also republished on Alltop, which is a general information website. So I had some women that had indicated that they thought that I wrote in a way that they found amusing. So then we got a client who was a publisher, Write Life, in Omaha, and I said, this is the perfect storm. I've always wanted to write a book, and I've always said when there's time, and let's face it, there's never time. So, but I said, if I own an ad agency, I have a publisher for a client, and I already have a little bit of a following among menopausal women, then this is the time. So I wrote a book about a murder mystery, and the protagonist is a menopausal woman who owns an ad agency in Omaha, Nebraska.
We write about what we know.
Absolutely. So you know, it's been a fascinating. It's like getting a PhD doing this whole thing. But I didn't really know for sure that they would write, that they would publish the book, because they certainly weren't obligated. We talked about it a little bit, and they said, go ahead and write it. But I wasn't writing a whole book unless I had at least an idea that they might publish it. So mm-hmm. I wrote the first three chapters, and they said, we like what we've read, keep writing. But so I didn't know for sure until we really got far into the editing phase that it was actually ever going to come out, you know. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have that awful upfront rejection until I started trying to get it into libraries.
Which is funny because they're free.
Yeah, you know.
Do they buy the book? Do libraries buy the book?
Yes, they do. There are a couple of places. One of them is Ingram's, and the books are all listed on there, and they do buy them. It's a discounted rate. But the interesting thing is, even if you offer to donate the book, they won't guarantee that they'll put it on the shelf.
Funny.
Yeah.
Just imagine if that happened to Stephen King or Janet Ivakovich or Charlene Harris or some of the other. Patricia Cromwell, for example.
Well, you know, it did.
It did?
Yeah, it did at first.
At one point.
Yeah.
In 1962.
In 1960. But, you know, I mean, you have to get a groundswell. And once you start getting known and noticed, it sort of has to build slowly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it hurt my feelings a little bit because my publisher sent some press releases to Connecticut and we sent some things there. And I lived there for a long time and they don't care. They want no part of the book. But we'll fix that.
Yes, you will.
Yes, I will.
Next, Manhattan Island.
That's right.
We have to take a quick break. It's the bottom of the hour, news, weather, and sports. If you have any questions, 721-1340. We'll be right back with
Engine Rebuilds online at MasticAutomotive.com.
Welcome back to the legendary KHEB, 1340 AM. You're live with Rachel Roberts and Robin Donovan. She is the author of Is It Still Murder Even If She Was a Bitch?
And it is.
Love saying that this morning. And nothing like starting your Tuesday morning off with a title like that.
Awesome. Just keep saying it as much as you want.
I'm just going to keep saying it.
All right.
Okay, so you were talking a little bit about publishing.
Yes.
What is, okay, so there's so many forms of publishing now. We have the traditional publishing, yes. Which they take like, was it 65% of all sales or something of the sort, or 25%?
Oh, it's more than that. In traditional publishing, I mean, yeah. I know someone actually who lives in Omaha who has published 17 books, and she makes about probably 3 or 4 cents a book.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know someone else who's in New York who got a deal earlier in the year for 7%.
Oh.
So, yeah, no, the traditional publishers take a big chunk.
But do they pay forward? Like say I put out this book and I say, okay, I've got these beautiful ideas.
Yep.
Do they give you a retainer? It's not called a retainer. What is it called? You know, when they pay.
Yes, I know. I'm trying to think of the word myself now that you said that.
Darn
yes.
It.
Now we're going to have to Google that too.
And I forgot, totally forgot to Google the other.
An advance.
An advance.
Yes. You know, I've done some research because we do have a little bit of a little book division called Bozell Books where we help authors promote their books. It's, you know, if you need a website, if you need a trailer, we try to do mm-hmm. them. So they look nice and they don't look homemade, but they're not that expensive. So I've done a lot of research and a lot of what's out there now is, it's not uncommon in traditional publishing to get a $50,000 retainer. But, and not to discourage people, because I think writing a book has been one of the more rewarding experiences of my life, but selling books is really tough. And everyone told me that, and they were right. Mm-hmm. But from what the research that I did, less than 5% of the authors ever make that $50,000 up. So the publishing companies are losing their shirts. So as a result, where when we, if those of your listeners who are old enough to remember Murder, She Wrote,
yes,
she was, it was so glamorous. They had limos and champagne and all these wonderful speaking engagements, and the publishing company did everything. Now the author, even in a traditional publishing, the author is doing the majority of it, unless you're big, like a Ivanovich or a Dan Brown. Those mm-hmm. people, but that's a very, very small percentage. You know, the majority of people, the publisher expects you, that's part of your contract, to get out there and promote that book. And very often these days, when you go the traditional publishing route, the first thing you do is spend maybe a year or more trying to find an agent, a literary agent, yeah, who will be able to help you package your book and sell it to a publishing company. So it's a very, very, and then, you know, once you're, so maybe it's a year to find an agent, maybe it's a year or two to sell the book to a publishing company, and then it's a, typically 18 months in edit. So you can, it's like a 5-year plan to get a book through traditional publishing. On the other hand, a lot of authors, even some of the big ones like Malcolm Gladwell, are touting self-publishing.
James Patterson just self-published, yes, the last Alex Marsh, whatever.
His yeah,
name,
and
Alex,
he can
whatever.
Afford to.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know, but most
yeah, he
authors,
can afford to.
You know, I mean, even. Even if you're not self-publishing, a lot of the promotion comes out of your pocket. I mean, if you need to travel somewhere, you pay for that. Now, there are times, if you get well-known enough, you can get a fee for speaking, and they'll pay your expenses. But for a while, while you're building that momentum, it's all coming out of your pocket. So if you run an ad or any kind of promotion that you do, have a brochure done or anything, you're paying for all of that. So in self-publishing, you're paying for everything. And there are a lot of different ways to go where it doesn't have to be super expensive. For me, the biggest concern about self-publishing is not getting the editing.
I would need editing.
When I turned my manuscript in, it was absolutely perfect. Nothing needed to be done. But after 5 edits and 5 proofs, I realized it was a much better product. And friends of mine came up to me, and the first thing they said, which is not the first thing you want to hear about your new book, there were no errors. We checked and there were no typos. I was like, really? Is that all you could say about it? But to them, they were amazed, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but when I read a lot of stuff that's self-published, and my God, it's, there are typos, there are errors, there were,
right,
you know, and you really need that editing. So this form, Write Life, that's in Omaha, they call that collaborative publishing. They pay for all of the expenses to publish it. They'll design the cover for you. They'll get it listed. They'll get your ISBN number. They'll send out press releases. They'll support you if you do local speaking engagements. They expect you to promote it yourself, and they expect you to make some sort of an investment, but there's not a set dollar amount. They'd love to have you do speaking engagements, but it's a lot of work to set them up. And if you do a speaking engagement in a bookstore, they'll say, sure, we'll do it Saturday. It'll be great. It'll be fun. We have room for X amount of people. And then at the end they say, and make sure you fill the seats with people who buy books. And it's like, how many of those can you do? And you've tapped out pretty much everyone you know.
Yeah.
You know? So the libraries, they don't put that kind of pressure on you. I like libraries.
Yeah. And you said Nebraska. Do you get any in Iowa and stuff like that, though,
I just did a Council Bluffs author fair in their big, beautiful library. So that was really fun. This Saturday is the La Vista Author Fair. So word of mouth, it's sort of starting to spread out. The author fairs have been great for me too, because not only have I sold some books, but I've also met interviewers and reviewers, and that's getting the word out is everything. So thank you, Rachel.
Well, you're welcome. We have a connection through Corey Miller, and that's been really nice because she's has a blog radio that's she's been interviewing authors, and then she sends their name to me if they're local. So because I like people to come in as opposed to calling in. And I have had a couple of call-ins, which have been a really, really neat books, basically nonfiction that have to do with kind of the, you know, what's going on in, in the nation now. Sure. But yes, I appreciate you coming in from Omaha.
It's nice to be here in person and meet with you. And it's such a cool studio, and I definitely love that. Check out my picture on Facebook too, because you know, I look like I really know what I'm doing here behind this mic.
Facebook.com/live with Rachel Roberts So, Bazell Advertising is keeps you busy.
It does.
So when do you have time for writing?
You know, I write on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And, it was funny because I started this book in January of 2010 and I wrote the three chapters like mad. I mean, they must have been waiting to come out. And I sent it in, and once I got it back and they said, you know, we like it enough for you to continue writing, I thought, oh crap, now what do? I don't know how to write a book. And I thought, what an idiot. I did made it a murder mystery. Now I have to tie up loose ends. Right. So I thought, I have no idea how to do that. So I started looking at other books and saying, okay, how many pages is it? And what I broke it up into quarters. And because what happened was when I started writing, like the fourth chapter, I was starting to write the ending. And I was like, well, this is going to be very short.
Yeah.
So the rule I made for myself is you can't begin to talk about the ending until the fourth quarter of the book.
Fourth quarter of the book. Okay.
So that helped me a lot. And so I as I went on, I take notes as I'm writing, and I take notes on each chapter so I know who I've introduced and what has occurred, so that
you forget.
You do forget.
Note cards are good.
You do
for that.
Forget. Like in my second book, I and you don't always, you know, pick it up, but one day I was thinking, wait a minute. I think he told me what the murder weapon, I think I learned at a luncheon what the murder weapon was. And then five chapters later, I said, isn't anyone going to ever tell me what the murder weapon? And I was like, I got to change that, you know?
Right.
So keeping really good notes on each chapter. So, you know, the process evolved and it's helped a lot. And what I don't want to do is become too templatized. So it's funny because there's in Omaha, there's a 13th Street Mystery Bookstore, and the woman that's there is really, she's really funny. I would say somewhat on the cynical side. She's from New Jersey too. So once she told me that, I understood why cynicism,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I can say that cause I'm from
East Coast.
Yeah. But New Jersey is the worst, really. I mean, you know, why wouldn't they be? Everyone in Manhattan makes fun of us. So,
they do.
But when I first went in, I introduced myself to her and I said, you know, I've got a book coming out. And she said, oh yeah, probably it won't come out. And I was like, well, it is coming out. And she's like, she kept saying, if I had a quarter for every author who's been disappointed. And I was like, no, I know the publisher, it's coming out. And then I just gave up and, you know, let her say whatever she was going to say. But then I said something about, well, I just want you to know that it's a comedy. So probably more like an Ivanovich than it would be like, you know, like Agatha Christie. And she said, oh, Ivanovich. It only took her four books to start getting templatized. And I thought, wow, if I could do that well, I could live with templatized. But she kind of made me a little paranoid. So,
yeah.
So I tried to make the second one really different. So maybe
you
it's good.
You do have to love some of those authors though that come out. You do have to just love the stories and love the characters because
they do
get over-templatized.
And I think Ivanovich is a little bit over-templatized. And I think in like her 17th book, she kind of made Stephanie a little sleazier than I would have liked to see because, you know, so. But
she was wearing mini skirts and bouffant hair.
Well, in the 17th, I think
it was in
17,
the 80s.
She was sleeping with everyone.
Oh, okay.
So
never mind then.
It's like. Okay.
Yeah, because she slept with no one in the first couple
of
days.
Right, exactly. She went a little far.
Darn it,
on
Stephanie Plum.
Rain it back, girl.
Rain it back. Put some pants on.
Yeah, really.
Okay. We have to take a quick break. If you have any questions, 721-1340. Welcome back to the legendary K-Hub 1340 AM. You're live with Rachel Roberts and Robin Donovan, the author of Is It Still Murder Even If She Was a Bitch? So, future plans for Robin. What are you writing now?
Well, my second book is in edit right now, and that is titled I Didn't Kill Her, But That May Have Been Short-Sighted. So I've killed another woman, but I am halfway through my third book where I finally killed a man. And that's, the working title on that is, I Don't Know Why They Killed Him. He Wasn't Really That Annoying. So we'll see where that goes. But, but it's an interesting because it's sort of like juggling balls in the air because I'm juggling speaking engagements and, appearances for this book that's out. And readings and things like that. So I still am getting into the content of this book. I'm editing the book that I've already finished, but now I have to really go through and make sure everything works together. And then writing a third book. And so I juggle from one to the other to the other. And it's sometimes I forget, which book was that in? I mean, I was saying before, I wouldn't have thought that I'd forget something I wrote myself. But once you're at something like, close to 300 pages, there's a lot of stuff in there. So you do forget.
Is there anything you would want to read out loud to give the audience a little taste of? You can say no. I didn't ask you over break.
No, that's okay. I wouldn't want to take a lot of time to find it. If I were to read something out loud, I would probably read something about Clovis. Clovis, it's funny. She's a character who I threw in as just sort of somebody else to sort of a filler kind of thing. And she has become my favorite character. Clovis is Clovis Cordoba Seville, and she is possibly the most narcissistic human on earth.
She drinks champagne a lot.
Well, I haven't shown her drinking champagne, but she is a champagne drinker, but she's always very quick to point out all of Donna Lee's faults, and Donna Lee is my protagonist, and there's a lot of projection going on with Clovis, but The great thing about Clovis, and you're in psychology and psychiatry, and the great thing about her is you come to realize that she would rather be in jail than not be the center of attention. And so, using her and exploring, because I have known people that are just like that. And, in fact, one of my editors said, your murder victim and this Clovis are just not believable. And it's like, oh, honey, you got to be in advertising to know it.
Does Clovis have something to hide?
Clovis comes from a family of Romanian gypsies.
So, yes.
So, yeah.
And hence the jail instead of being in front of people figure out who she is.
Well, she's very proud of herself. I mean, I think she tells people about her Romanian gypsies because she believes that she is overcome. But she uses that background when she's telling you, I know this centers around me. Because I'm from Romanian gypsies and I know things. So she's a master of using anything to make herself front and forward at all times and projecting onto Donna Lee how, Donna really, these cries for attention are embarrassing. You need to stop that. So it enables me to explore this narcissistic personality, but it also enables me to poke fun at my main character. Mm-hmm. And you can see the frustration. And I think you feel the frustration because we've all had that person who is so unbelievably annoying that you just want to punch her in the face. And you have to let her stand there and criticize you because it's just too much trouble to try to stop.
Yeah, I get those people out of my life.
Yes, I have an eject button and I hit that as soon as I can. Yeah.
I think 30 something, you just decide, I don't need that.
Very true, except when you come up against them in a business setting because you don't always have the choice.
That is true.
So,
or they're related to you, which thank God I don't have anybody.
Or they're related
like that.
To you, but you can eject some relatives, I mean, and still live to tell about it.
Yeah, maybe.
Or move away.
If you don't have relatives you can live around, you should move away.
Absolutely.
Because it just gets trouble.
We've always had a 45-minute rule. No, never living closer than 45 minutes to relatives. It's served us very well.
Really?
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine that.
Yeah.
I like being down the street from my family.
Well, There are days I would too.
Days.
But only a few days.
Okay. I don't think there are days. I don't know. Oh, you know, of course, half my relatives are listening right now. So
okay. Sure. They're those wonderful relatives that you talk about all the time in glowing terms. Yes, I know.
I actually do. Yeah. Actually do. So you have some exciting stuff coming out. You also blog on a daily.
I do.
And it's about menopause. And I know you mentioned it before.
Yes.
But how did you get going in that gig?
Well, you know, being at an ad agency, we had a blog. Our original blog was marketing from the inside out. And that's still out there. Well, you know, I mean, I spent a lot of time, you know, ridiculing some TV ads. So, I mean,
it's kind of funny and things like that.
Well,
it's
not... everything I write has to have humor to it. Otherwise, I lose interest.
I was thinking it was a business tool.
You know, it is a business tool, not how I use it, but I believe that there should be humor in business. Not everyone goes along with that, but I don't care. Mm-hmm. So, but my business partner, Kim Mickelson, came to me one day and she said, you know, she said, people go to you and ask you about menopause because she said, you know, you're not afraid to talk about it. And she said, you're not afraid to make jokes about it, but you give them some good information. She said, you know, that there's actually nothing out there right now. This was 4 or 5 years ago. She said, it's either textbook dry as dust or it's just bitching for the sake of bitching with no information.
Right.
So she said, I think you need to do a blog. And I said, how am I going to fill a blog on menopause for all that long? And you know what? Lo and behold, I apparently have a lot to say on pretty much anything. So, I was doing it for maybe a little bit over a year, and it got picked up by Vibrant Nation, which I love that name. It's a website for women 50 plus. It's a community, and they have their blog circle. So they repost the same blog, but I get a lot more comments on posts that show up on Vibrant Nation because they have such a dynamic community and women who have a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And it's also picked up by Alltop, which is a general information website. It's under health, under menopause too. And, you know, that's been very rewarding because I've actually had people say, my friend said you saved her life. And, you know, I mean, I know that that's probably not literal, but it's so nice to know that you can make a joke and make fun of yourself or your doctor and, you know, help somebody else.
You might not have saved her life, but maybe you saved her family's life.
I might have saved her family's life, indeed. And I'm also doing a little bit of blogging on because we do Bozell Books now on our website.
Okay. You can finish that sentence.
Oh, well, you know what I was just going to say, I just put some things out there on, how to get started. And I actually had people write to me and say, I've always wanted to write a book and I never knew how to get started. And now you've inspired me. And I thought, wow, sometimes it doesn't take much. Mm-hmm. So helping people get going, it's kind of cool.
So one quick word of advice for the publishing or the writing piece, what would you, give an advice to writers? One piece
of advice. If you really like to write, write.
Doesn't matter what.
No.
Just get it out.
Just get it out there.
Because the true people who really love to write, just write.
We write everything. Well, as Ivanovich says, we don't write to publish. We write because we love to write.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Robin, for coming on today. Robin Donovan, the author of Is It Still Murder, Even If She Was a Bitch?
Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome. Tomorrow is Jen from Hy-Vee. Give us a call, 721-1340.
Where authorities say for the families of the three young women who've been missing the past decade,
prayers.